Lennon and McCartney would tell us very assuredly that all you need is love. Love is all you need. I wonder how you think of that lyric. Most people tend to think of the feeling of love. If there were more people in love in the world would be a better place. The feeling of love is powerful. It can mess with our minds and our biologies. Think back to the first time you fell in love. Your appetite left you. You sort of felt light and floaty. Some of you still feel like that, don't you? It's a very powerful emotion and feeling. And so it's not surprising that Lennon and McCartney will tell us that that's all you need. Jesus says this: love the Lord your God with all your heart, all your emotions, all your soul, all your mind. This is the first greatest commandment. Second's like it: love your neighbor as yourself. All the law and the prophets hang on these two commandments. You see, Lennon and McCartney really, I think, talk about the feeling of love, that powerful motivator for so much. We give it, we receive it. It does great, big, wonderful things in the world. But it is also something that people fall in and out of, isn't it? If you're married, for example, you know that the love you first felt for your beloved is not the same as the love you feel for them now. Because marriage and work and family and all the stresses that those carry, they provide us with love, yes. But I'm sure we've had days where we're frustrated or weary. Even if you're single, your feelings for family and for friends, they go up and down, don't they? They ebb and they flow. The lockdowns we've had have exposed that. Very changeable feelings. You end up asking of a morning, oh, will this ever end? Or why is nothing ever easy? Your emotional life goes up and down. Like the ocean ebbs and flows, very human. In fact, all of our Psalms contain all the emotions we feel. I could give you 20 minutes of quotations from Psalms about how you might be feeling. The psalmist feels everything from the deep, silent despair to the joyful, worshiping, rejoicing, and then everything in between. And the same thing comes up in the New Testament. That doesn't go away. Romans 15, for example, sees Paul reaching for joy. He says, may the God of hope fill you with all joy and peace as you trust in him, so that you may overflow with hope by the power of the Spirit. Whereas you also see the other extreme, somewhere like 1 Thessalonians 3, where Paul talks about distress and persecution. Maybe it's easier to think of the football fan. I always think of Ivan McComb when I think of football fans. I'm not sure why that is, Ivan. Great Arsenal man. Someone like Ivan knows the range of feelings and emotions available in the football match. The tears and despair of relegation, or the big loss that you can't get over. And then there's the exhilaration of the joy of the last-minute goal and the championship win. People can live and die with every game, can't they? Look again at what Jesus says. He's summarizing here faith. What does it mean to be a Christian? Love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your mind. The first and greatest commandment. The second is like it. Love your neighbor as yourself. All the law and prophets hang on these two commandments. He's saying there the whole Bible hangs on love. Now, in the language of Scripture, the heart is the seat of the emotions. And from there, some might get the impression that you're supposed to feel a certain way as Christians. If you're not feeling passionate, intense, joyous, and victorious in your faith, you might start feeling guilty and sad. You start to think that real Christians are mature, they're close to God, they feel the right things in the right way, don't they? And we discourage ourselves by thinking that if we lack those things, those feelings, then there's something wrong with us. But we've already briefly seen feelings are very, very changeable. We all get out of bed on the wrong side some days, don't we? Our feelings are subject to near constant change. The whole world is on board with this now. We've heard this slogan, it's okay not to feel okay. We nod and go, great, that's great. And it is great. But that's a phrase, that's a slogan that still lives in the boundary of feelings. And feelings change. So what we need to talk about this morning when we look at a verse like this is not just our feelings, but what's called our affections. That's a very old-fashioned Christian way of talking about it. Look at it again. We're to love the Lord our God with all our heart, soul, and mind. What we have there, folks, is not actually a question of how much we love God or how much feeling we have towards Jesus, or even how intense our prayer life might be. What we have there is a question of what we love, or in this case, who we love. And here's the difference. An emotion, a feeling, is usually a response to something. Someone tells you they love you. I love you. And you get that warm, cozy feeling welling up, a warmth in the chest, the gentle, joyful ache of the heart, even the odd tear of happiness. Why else do we cry at weddings? But an affection is different. An affection is not a response to something, but a starting point of what we truly love. There's a negative version of that. It's something that we might hate. You might hate a lot, not just in response to it, but just because you know it's wrong. Pineapple on a pizza. That's wrong. Right? Right? Silly example. Think of something serious. Think of something like child slavery and abuse. Yes, we maybe feel something in response to those horrible stories we see and hear. But we really start from a position of knowing it's wrong. That's an affection. It's not an emotion. It's a posture, a starting point, not just some temporary response. In the positive version, an affection is what you long for, what you desire, what you know is good. Now, we're really talking about the man who's the most helpful in this idea of the Christian affection, a man called Jonathan Edwards. Edwards states that Christianity is not just about feelings, but about affections. It's not good enough to know about God or to have heard of Jesus. The Christian undergoes a change in their affections. They love God. They love Jesus. They love the Spirit. They no longer love themselves. They no longer love the world. They certainly no longer love the influence and ways of the devil, which is a way of saying that they're not led by their feelings. What does Jesus say? Love the Lord your God with all your heart, all your soul, all your mind. In other words, we need a change. Not in our feelings. They'll change by themselves. We need a change in our affections. We can't really change what we feel or think, but we need to change what we love. Do you know, there's a lot of stuff in the world about self-esteem and self-help and loving yourself. That's actually a cruel form of slavery. Loving yourself holds such promise. You'll be happy and content. But the reality is that it doesn't deliver. It delivers nothing. Our feelings change. they're not a good indicator of who we really are. But loving God, like Jesus says, means that we love someone unchangeable. Loving others then means that we are completely free. It is the freedom of freedoms because it promises us everything and it over-delivers. It gives us more than we might imagine. So how do you change what you love? Well, the change comes from God. Real change doesn't come from being grateful for what God gives us. That's actually a version of self-love. Real change comes from the real attraction to who God is. God's holiness is what we're to love the most. His wisdom is lovely because it's holy. There's no one wise like God. His majesty comes from his holiness. There is no one as majestic as the Lord. And our affections change when we come to know more of who God really is, what Jesus has really done, and when we are increasingly aware of the Spirit's operation in our life. Because our affection, our starting point, cannot be moved or changed by music or singing. It doesn't work if you hear clever words or soaring preaching. It doesn't even come from being part of a big, exciting church or crowd. But our hearts can be moved when his Spirit moves us to know him better. In other words, you can't work on your feelings or your affections by focusing on your feelings or affections. That's a prison. You can change your affections by focusing on God. Love the Lord your God with all your heart, all your soul, all your mind. So, you know, this table this morning is a big help. It has nothing to do with how we're feeling, but everything to do with who God is. It is a fact of grace. No matter how you come to it this morning, it has nothing to do with how you're feeling. You can be feeling high or low, joyful or full of shame, happy or sad. The table tells us God loves us. Jesus has spilled blood for us. And the Spirit seeks to comfort us. We get to see the source of our affections in the table. But we should also see them in the church as well. Final example of what we're talking about. If I really love someone, it might even be one of you, and I need to talk to you, to correct something, to give a little rebuke, I would naturally be full of nerves about that. I would worry about it. I'd be up all night worrying about it. What am I going to say? How is it going to go? But if I love you, if I have real affection for you, then I will have the chat. I will gently point you in the right direction. I won't fear rejection or what you might think of me, because I will know that this is true, that the good and the godly thing to do is to do the right thing. Fear of rejection or fear of your anger could stop me in my tracks, because that fear springs out of self-love. I don't want to be the bad guy. I want to be the nice guy. That's self-love. That's me thinking of me, not thinking of you. And it's a swinging door. It works both ways. If one of you has to correct or rebuke me, then I need to put away my pride and my anger and that inner lawyer, you know, that guy who wakes up and tells you you're right, put him away and embrace you as a brother and sister and embrace the fact of what it takes to have a hard conversation. What does it take? It's this. It's not love of ourselves. It's not fear of each other. It's a love for God and a love for those he loves. Love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your mind. This is the first and greatest commandment. And the second's like it. Love your neighbor as yourself. All the law and the prophets hang on these two commandments.